From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made as we move closer to spring, but more importantly, move closer to Easter Sunday, Holy Week coming up just in a couple of weeks. So appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're rejoicing to be looking across the table here in our studio at Jennifer Campbell. Jennifer, good day to you.
Hi, how are you?
Doing very good.
Good.
Is it spring yet?
No, if you look outside.
Every day, I think the sun's peeking out a little bit.
It's so bizarre, too. Like, I'm driving into work, and there'll be, like, sunlight in, like, one section, and then it's super dark clouds, and then, like, this morning it started sprinkling. All of the weather on one 30-minute drive into town, into Sacramento.
So. God gave us many different treats.
yes, that's the way to say it. It
is funny because, you know, when fall rolls around, I go, I love fall. I really love fall. The changing of the colors and the kind of the changing of the climate and all that. And then when you finally get that first day of spring that's really like 75 degrees or something, and, you know, you can smell the flowers in the air and you go, wow, this is really cool. And then sometimes those warm summer nights, I really like those, you know, where
I do too.
It gets dark at 9 o'clock or something and it's just still out and it's almost like there's no temperature.
Yeah. That's nice. But yeah, we're getting all that weather.
We're getting all that.
In like a day right now.
And nothing like a great storm. You know, we don't want flooding and trees falling down on people's houses and stuff, but a storm in winter is kind of fun.
I appreciate them as long as they only rain at night when I don't have to drive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Driving, you know, it should be banned during rain, I think.
You know, rain should only happen when not traffic.
Yeah.
Not when I have to
out
there.
The good Lord gave us, I mean, really gave us a lot of things to enjoy. I mean, it could be, just every day is exactly the same.
Yes.
Exactly the same temperature.
That would be boring.
Of course, that's San Diego.
And San Diego is lovely, too.
It is. Everybody loves San Diego.
Yeah.
It's a little cooler there than people think it is.
I think so, too.
People think it's just warm all the time. They'd get that June gloom.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That is true.
Anyway, you've been busy all over.
We have been all over this last
week. Let's talk first about the Eucharistic Congress. It was last weekend.
Yeah. So,
Saturday.
On Saturday, we had the Eucharistic Congress. And technically, we're going to talk about Fired Up as well. And this year, we decided to make Fired Up part of the Eucharistic Congress to really get that youth element and help our young people understand this Eucharistic revival year as well. But we did a Eucharistic Congress, and we did it a little differently than people might have expected. Instead of having it in one large venue, we operated it at three parishes in the Sacramento area.
All sort of downtown-ish.
Sort of, not
exactly. But
and, you know, some with more than others and some of a walk towards our cathedral.
Downtown, midtown.
Midtown-ish, anyway. Yeah. So we were at Our Lady of Guadalupe, St. Francis, and Immaculate Conception.
Right.
Each one kind of had a different theme. So, for instance, at Our Lady of Guadalupe, the whole program that we did was in Spanish. At St. Francis, we had some of the same speakers, but it was kind of just for all ages. And then at Immaculate Conception, it was led by our Black Catholic ministry, and with the focus on youth. So really making that one for our young people, our high schoolers and middle schoolers and young adults. We had a similar speaking team at each, with some additions. Each location had kind of their own flair. So like at IC, they had a gospel mass. At St. Francis, the band that we use for Fired Up was there for music and for the mass. And then at OLG, it was a Spanish-speaking choir and everything for the day that they did. So we had Father Agustino Torres was there. Mm-hmm. He went to St. Francis and to Immaculate Conception. Priscilla Garza, who works with, she's a focus missionary. She spoke at Our Lady Guadalupe and St. Francis. And then Ryan Ramirez, who was our MC at Fired Up, which we'll kind of go into a little more later, but he did a talk at Immaculate Conception along with Father Agostino.
Very good. We've had most of those people on the program at one point or another.
We've had Father Agostino here before many times. I've never had the privilege of just spending time with him and enjoying a meal with him in the past. Just lots of things happen, right? This time I really was able to spend time with him and talk to him, and just like his love for the young people is just so amazing. It was during a Fired Up Mass, and he looked at the kids and he turned to me and he said, I just love them all, no matter what they're looking at me with right now. And I just took that. I was like, that is just a beautiful thing, especially with young people, because it's really easy to see the things they're doing wrong sometimes.
Sure.
And for him just to be like, yeah, I just love them. They're great. You know, which is why it was perfect that he spoke at Immaculate Conception.
Kind of like a parent almost.
Almost like a parent.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's priest. So, and then Bishop was at all three locations for a different amount of times. Spoke a little
he
bit.
He was bilocating, or he was actually at
he
all.
He went to all three of them separately. He was not bilocating. I'm not going to start that rumor. But yeah, he went to all three locations, and then he ended the day with at Immaculate Conception and was the celebrant of the Mass that we had at Immaculate Conception.
All three had Masses.
Yeah. St. Francis and Immaculate Conception did.
Okay.
And so after the last part, which for those two places it was Mass, we had a Eucharistic procession, which if you could do a quick Google Maps for yourself, Our Lady of Guadalupe is quite close to the cathedral.
It is.
So as you can imagine, they were the first to arrive at the cathedral. So they started, I think they arrived around...
I've actually made that march.
6:15-ish.
Yeah.
I'm going to say ish on all these times because while I was there and greeted them, I'm not entirely sure. And so we had three monstrances going on in the with that, so we had this kind of like transition of the monstrance at each time a new group came at the cathedral, and we had priests for hearing confession and all of that. So we did. So we started with Our Lady of Guadalupe's monstrance, and people went into the cathedral. And it was pretty full for just walking. Like, I'm not sure exactly when people were there throughout the day, but just in the procession, about 800 people from Our Lady of Guadalupe came. So they pretty much filled the cathedral. You know, like,
did anybody park their car and say, I got to join this?
Some people did. There were people. Yeah. I mean, I was standing at the door because my job was to greet the priests and ask them to tell them where to go to hear confession.
Right, right.
So I'm like standing by the door. And so there were people like, what is this? What is going on? So that was kind of beautiful. There was, once that community was there, St. Francis was the next to arrive, the procession from St. Francis, probably 30 minutes later.
It's not too far either.
It's not too far. It's a good hike. And some of it was like the way they had to go because of the other events that were happening in downtown this weekend.
There was no traffic control, was there?
There was a little bit, but not that much, because there was a lot going on in Sacramento weekend. So they kind of had to walk past the cathedral and come down I and go around, like, if you know the area, if you know, you know. And so they came in next. And then we removed the first monstrance and brought the second one in. Immaculate Conception, IC, sorry, shorthanded. They took
kind of inside baseball.
Immaculate Conception. It took them about an hour and a half, almost maybe hour and 45 minutes to get here.
It's a long walk.
It's a long walk. And they actually walked down Broadway first, and then up 21st Street.
Uh-huh.
So they basically made the turn at Pancake Circus.
Yeah, right, exactly, right here.
Right here.
Yeah.
And so they were later than everyone else.
It's hard to walk by Pancake Circus, but maybe they were closed.
They were closed. They're not open 24 hours anymore. Yeah. And that is actually the walk that Bishop Soto walked.
Oh, wow.
So he had the longest walk, and he was... There were multiple priests, so they took turns carrying the monstrance. So I'm not sure the order in which they went, but I know he was the one who processed it into the cathedral, and then did a time of adoration in front of the Blessed Sacrament once with the monstrance from Immaculate Conception.
And you have no idea how many souls and minds you touched while
just
processing.
I mean, the beauty of that, like every time when they would come in, like you would just see a bunch of us would kind of go outside just to see the like procession, from I think usually it's I Street down and to the cathedral, which is where we could see them. And it was pretty impressive.
I remember one time being in Washington State and on I-90 near Spokane and driving east towards Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, with my wife. I think it was before we had kids. And it was, you know, just we were going from one place to another. And I saw this huge procession going over the freeway overpass. We were kind of between towns, but maybe a little bit of a suburb or something. And I said, wow, look at those people. I got to find out what this is.
What is this? What's going on? Yeah.
And took the next exit we could find and worked our way back on, side roads, country roads. It was a pro-life march.
Oh, wow.
And we parked the car and
joined in.
Yeah.
And that was, it was great when people would arrive and just like the fellowship and the like, because there are, there's older people walking and like now once you got to the cathedral, if your car was parked back at the other, how do you get back? And just kind of that communal, okay, we've got to figure this out. And people were just so kind to each other. And somebody in our office, and I'm trying to remember exactly who it was, but they were like, well, I'm going to go now because this woman wants to walk back and not by herself. And I was like, great. Like, that's a perfect place to.
Exactly.
That's what's needed. Like, would you like to stay and pray in front of the sacrament? Probably. But like, Jesus is in that person too. So like that kind of fellowship was beautiful to see. And there were little kids and grandmas and grandpas and, people in wheelchairs that did the procession. And it was just, so many strollers. So great to see all of the, the breadth of what our church is.
Yeah. And then at the cathedral, adoration and confession. And then Night Fever. Explain that a little bit.
We weren't able to do Night Fever this time. But we ended with adoration. We went until about a little after 9 o'clock.
Yeah, it's getting late for Night
Fever. Because it was getting late. So at about 9 o'clock, Father Michael from the cathedral did benediction and the Blessed Sacrament was reposed. That's kind of how we ended. Bishop was there for once, he got there from Immaculate Conception, was stayed for a little while. It was great for everyone to get to see him and the cathedral was never empty that whole time. Like, yes, people kind of came and went because as you can imagine, if we've got, 800 from one church and 200 from another and 150 from another, like it's a lot of people in there. And I don't know.
Did they have a vigil mass that night at the cathedral?
The cathedral doesn't have a vigil mass right now. Okay. Yeah. So I think that was one of the things, the schedule change they made after
COVID.
Yeah. So they don't, but there's just people who are, wandering around, like there's restaurants and there was so many different events happening that people were just kind of wandering in, like, what is this? Mm-hmm. And which, I just was excited for people to get to see our cathedral. And
the cathedral, I mean, I've talked to, Sacramento, chamber type people. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the major tourist attractions in Sacramento.
I always forget how beautiful it is. And then I walk in and really remember again. And part of it's like, I have like very strong memories from, this was a very long time ago because I am old, but from high school, because my graduation and baccalaureate mass were there.
Oh, really?
So wow.
Which high school?
St. Francis.
St. Francis. Okay.
And so I was the cantor at our baccalaureate mass. And so it was like, every time I'm in there, that memory comes back to me. It's very visceral. And so, but being in there, that was before the renovation and seeing it, it's just, it's gorgeous.
Like, it's really spectacular.
It's and I had Bishop Minogue is I just like hearing stories about him, and he's very interesting to me because he's who built the cathedral.
Right,
and
right. What, 1886 or something, four or like, something yeah. like that. Yeah.
But like hearing, you know, how he moved the seat of the diocese to Sacramento, which is not something I guess easy to do, where he asked for the, where he got the cathedral place, where our state capitol has to look. Mm-hmm. You can't not see God. Like all of those stories. I just love it.
I think it was either Sacramento or Winnemucca.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And so he, there's like, so I was talking to Father Agostino about him when I was driving him from one location to another, and there's a bust of Bishop Minogue in the cathedral. And I was like, this is the dude.
It's amazing. It's an amazing
I just
story.
Think he's amazing. And being a, he was a 49er, and like, yeah. we learn about yeah. those in school. I had never thought of like a priest being a 49er.
No.
And not like the football team guys.
Yeah.
Like I never thought
about
that.
That's what they're
named for. Yeah, it's what they're named yeah. for. But like, I just never thought of it. So
California wasn't even a state in 1849.
No.
1850.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's just, our cathedral is just beautiful. So, and it was great to have, I like to show it off to people. So our speakers, Priscilla, Ryan, and Father Agostino got to see the cathedral for the first time. Priscilla has never been to California before.
Really?
So, I mean, I felt bad. We didn't get to show her a lot of it, but you know, she didn't get to see our cathedral, and she did the procession from St. Francis, and Father Agostino did the procession with Bishop from Immaculate Conception. So they did get to see a good portion of our beautiful city.
That's a nice, that is a pretty portion from mm-hmm. Immaculate Conception down to the cathedral.
It is. And so, and St. Francis as well.
And St. Francis, yeah.
Just parks. And for Our Lady of Guadalupe walked past the state capitol when
Guadalupe has that beautiful park across the street.
Yes, yeah. It's huge park.
Really nice area.
So yeah, it was great to get to see all of that happening and where the Spirit was moving people and their desire to, you know, to understand what this Eucharistic revival is. And hopefully from this, you know, people can step out from the prayer in front of the Blessed Sacrament and see the service that we need to do in our communities and going out
Very
into
well
the
said.
World.
Yep.
And I don't think, and that's another part of the beauty of having it at the cathedral is there are a number of unhoused people all around. And if you can't like come down to the cathedral and pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament and see that like we need to help people, that's hard for me not like it's hard for you not to see, right? Like yep. especially there, and you know, even just staying there, like there is another, like there's just these moments that like we're waiting for everyone to show up, and a gentleman came up and just asked Father Michael for a blanket, and he like they just at the cathedral they just have blankets for people, mm-hmm. which like I'd never seen that before. And that to me was like, that was such a like moment of like beauty that like, he just was like, okay, I'll go get you one. And he just went inside, like took him a few minutes, came back out, blanket in a nice bag for him and gave it to the guy, and the guy walked away. But, that's what God is calling us to, right? Like that service yep. and to be of service to the people around us. Sometimes that's giving somebody a blanket. Sometimes that's just smiling. You know, like it's all those things.
Yep. Smiles at what I see. I saw it as I was on some sitcom and some little kid said, my mom always told me that smiles are free. You should give them away. You know?
Right.
But it is amazing. Like you say, sometimes just a smile. Smiling at a complete stranger and just how you doing, you
right.
know, it can be. It could change a day at least.
It could.
Or an hour or something, you know, it's so different than kind of walking by with your head down.
Right. And it's challenging to all of us. Like we're especially, I would say, people in the US, like we are especially, you know, want to be to our own island, right? Like we are called to like pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, by ourselves. And we can do it ourselves. And that's just not true. Like we are called to be in community.
No,
that's what our faith wants.
We are.
We're called to live in community.
I mean, you look at what I mean. There's a million stories, but you look at the founding of the Knights of Columbus.
Right.
That was community helping. You know,
helping each other
with true need. You know, and that's what St. Vincent de Paul Society right. does. You know, it's what it, it's what the Knights do. It's what we're all. It's what the Gabriel Project does, and all Bishop Gallegos, and
we're called to serve and to be. And that's hospitality. Like we talk a lot about hospitality in our churches, and we worry about having hospitality committees. And sometimes hospitality is not necessarily like the row of ushers guarding the door,
right?
But it's the smile you give, or the time that you scoot over and let somebody sit, or which you know yeah. we all have our seat. We want to sit in the same place. We're creatures of habit, but yeah. it's all of those things. And yeah. I think it's important to remember, and that's you know this revival year. It's calling us to that. It's calling us to recognize the true presence. That it's not just piece of bread or a cookie. It's body and blood of Christ. It's the true presence. Like it is that. It's not something, it doesn't symbolize it. It becomes it.
And it's a profound difference.
It is. You know,
I don't have any disrespect for anybody who doesn't believe it, you know.
Right.
I'd like to help them believe it.
Right.
But you know, if somebody doesn't believe, they don't believe. I mean, they could yeah. lie to me and say, "Oh, yeah, I believe that," you know. But right. but if they don't, they don't. But to me, when I talk to people about it, I say, you know, it's first off, just read the book, you know,
right.
you know, and there it is. You know,
it's
take
what he said.
This is my body, and right. you know, take this is my blood. It's hard to overlook that. But and there are a number of, I mean, very faithful Christians who are very good people, but just don't happen to haven't crossed that line or,
right.
or whatever. And I say, you know, it isn't a belief of mine,
right?
As much as it is a truth.
It's a truth.
It doesn't matter if I believe it or I mean it matters, but it's still the real presence, whether right. or not I believe it.
It matters in my life if I believe it. But
sure.
But the
truth is still there. And truth is unchangeable.
Right.
And truth is not subject to whim or anything like that. And we discover all kinds of things. Scientists discover stuff every day that
right.
that not only sometimes it advances knowledge, but frequently it contradicts what right. they believed before.
Right.
You know, and whether it's fossils or the cosmos or just I saw National Geographic the other day, and it was something like 80 new underwater species that they it's like including some really weird things, you know.
Yeah, the deep ones down in the ocean are often really weird looking.
It's off the charts, you know.
Right,
and it makes you wonder about God, kind of like we want everything to have a purpose, you know,
right.
like what's the purpose of these animals we didn't even know about?
And they all have one, right? Everything does.
Absolutely. And they all got a way to survive and reproduce, or they wouldn't be there.
Exactly.
You know?
And I think, you know, to take it back to what we were talking about, but I think that's the point of this revival is helping all of us understand it. And then what is it calling us to? Because we can all just go and pray in adoration, and then we can do that. And that's great. And we should be praying. Like, I'm not saying that, but prayer needs to call us to go out and do something.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what are you being called to do? We're all going to be called to something a little different, right? Like we all have a different vocation. We all have our own personal vocation. But what is it being, what are we being called towards? And are we open to hearing that? Because that sometimes, you know, it's that idea of like, you have two ears and one mouth. Like, God wants you to listen more than you talk. I know that's weird on radio to say that, but.
I haven't heard that before.
But he gave you two ears and he wants you to see a lot. He wants you to hear a lot. And he wants you to talk a little. It's just the anatomy, right? Like,
yeah.
And so I think that's what we need to be listening for right now.
Of course, this is voice, but but it only goes out to the ears.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't hear with your mouth. So
yeah.
I think that's true. And I think, you know, that idea of like we all have our own vocation, that's something that we talk a lot about at Fired Up. So mm-hmm. to transition to Fired Up, because that yeah. was a big event this weekend. So we do four sessions of it throughout the year. We have one in November for the North State because of mm-hmm. weather. We don't ever know what's going to happen yeah. in the North in this time of year. But we had three over the weekend. So on top of the three events that we did at the parishes on Saturday evening and afternoon, we had three Fired Up. So we started on Saturday morning at St. Vincent St. Pat's. Yeah. In Vallejo at the mm-hmm. high school. And we had about 730 teens and chaperones. That's the teens and the chaperones. Don't worry. I wasn't just alone in a room with 700 kids. Gosh, no. And so we had the same speakers. We had the Revival Band, which it's a group of youth ministers from San Jose. They sounded amazing together. We had Father Agostino, Priscilla, and then Ryan running a day. And it's just a 4-hour program, ending with Mass with Bishop, where he does a blessing over these young people who are going to be confirmed mm-hmm. in the next few months. And we really focused on that idea of, like, what is the Eucharist calling us to in our lives? How does that reception of the sacrament of confirmation and how we receive the Eucharist as often as we need to receive the Eucharist, daily, weekly, whatever that happens to be for you in your life. But what is that calling us to? And, like, and moving that was Priscilla's talk, was like, it's calling us out of something. It's not just about a prayer. It's not just about the monstrance. It's about seeing past the monstrance to what we're being called to. Mm-hmm. So that was what Priscilla talked about. And then Father Agostino did a wonderful talk about our vocation and how the Eucharist and our confirmation leads us to finding our vocation, whether that be religious life, priestly vocations, married life, the single life, whatever that happens to be for you, you know, listening to God at those moments. Mm-hmm. And we did something new this time, which was really exciting. We had young people who had been confirmed in the last 2 to 3 years, I guess, maybe a little longer, come and share like a quick 5-minute testimony of how their confirmation has impacted their lives.
Wow.
So that was great to hear. And they were from the community. So in Vallejo, we had two teens from Vallejo that came and did that for us, young adults. We did the same thing. We woke up the next morning on Sunday and did two rounds on Sunday. So we had a morning session and an afternoon at a Christian Brothers in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. So we had 12, almost 1,300 kids in the morning session. And then in the afternoon session, about 750 kids.
You put them in the gym?
In the gym at CB.
That barely fits.
We just fit.
Yeah.
There was room for 5 more. and trust me, people tested me on that figuring out. So yeah, but it was great to have that kind of energy, and the kids were like really excited to be there. I mean, there's always one or two, right? The elusive one or two that just are like, why am I here? And hopefully through the talks and the music, they recognize why they were there. That's our goal with this event. It's a time for those that are being confirmed to like recognize that this is not just something that happens at your parish, right? It's something that happens globally. It's something that happens in all of our parishes in the diocese. So that's why it's part of our confirmation norms that they come to this event and see that idea of the church is bigger than them. But again, we were focusing this year, tying it into the Eucharistic revival. So how our confirmation and your first communion, and hopefully your 50th communion, you know, mm-hmm. how are they all connected to each other? And that's part of what the speakers talked about as well. And, you know, we have fun and they get to go outside and eat some snacks and all those kind of things. And Father Chris did our masses for us on Sunday. Father Chris Fraser, the Vicar General. So that was lovely to have him there in a different perspective. Because, you know, he or Bishop Soto will be doing all the confirmations right. in general. Sometimes Bishop Wiegand does them, but, or, you know, somebody else might get designated. But in general, it's the two of them. And so it's just nice for the kids who maybe won't see Father Chris or who won't see Bishop Soto to kind of see the other person at the same time.
Yeah, it's a big deal, too, when the bishop comes to your parish.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's still like, yes, I work in the pastoral center, but it's still a big deal when Bishop is like asking us questions and, you know, we're right before the mass, we're prepping stuff with him and after mass talking about how it went and, you know, him asking us questions about the teens. And he really does ask us like what's going on with the teens, and he talks to them as they walk out like of the thing. It's just great to see that.
I remember it was at the Bishop Gallegos dinner and for the home, of course, and I think it was Paulette Wiley, the executive director, but it was somebody was giving this little talk about their own confirmation and looked at, I think it was Paulette, the executive director there, and she said that she looked at a picture from her confirmation.
Oh, my gosh.
And guess who it was? It was Bishop Gallegos.
Oh, was it?
And she was stunned because she never put those two together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I know that was the story, and I'm pretty sure it was Paulette.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But what a moment.
And to have that moment and recognize it would just be, that's crazy.
I think mine was Bishop Minogue, but I'm not sure.
No, you're not that old. I know mine was Bishop Quinn. So.
Yeah, Bishop Quinn did a lot. I think. I have to go back and look at the different dates, but I'm pretty sure I have this thinking that it was Bishop Bell, but
that could be right.
I'm not sure what his dates right. If I go back and look, I could go, oh no, it couldn't have been him, but I think it was maybe.
Well, he was, because it's Bishop Bell who established Camp Pendola, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, so we're.
I'm pretty like 90% sure of that. So.
Yeah, yeah, we're talking.
60s.
19. Yeah. 60s.
Yeah, early 60s. He was, that would make sense. It's just, it's funny to like think about the bishops, like, you know, who did your confirmation? Do you remember? Like, what do you remember about that day? Like, you know, for some people it's like very vivid and some people it's not. Like, it's just, it just isn't. And so I don't know, you know, it's just, but to like find a picture and be like, well, now I work for the guy. House,
I know with us, it was, I mean, we were in a small town. It was a small group.
Yeah.
I think it was just because we didn't have a Catholic school. So it was just, I think, seventh and eighth graders. And we, I think the boys and girls, it was separate for some reason when we would meet.
Yeah.
You know, and we'd meet in the back of the church on a Tuesday after school or something, you know.
I went to a larger parish, so I grew up at St. Joseph's in Elk Grove. It's a larger parish, so we had a pretty large group, and I still know like at least half of the catechists that taught me. Like, I mean, my mom was one of them. Deacon Larry Heiner and his wife Sheree were in their oldest son was there with me. So, like, I just know a bunch of the people that, and then served with them. It was so bizarre when I became the youth minister at St. Joseph's is that I was serving with the people who had been my like confirmation teachers and things like that. Yeah. So it's kind of the fun of it. But so, I mean, Fired Up was a big success. We're already getting ready for next year and time, you know, travels on. But it was a good weekend and a lot happening, a lot of moving pieces, and by the grace of God, it all went smoothly.
Yeah. And you know, Bishop Soto was on last week talking about the rights of election, you know. And the numbers seemed to be really, really strong.
I think they were. I mean, I don't have the numbers for
that. You didn't have the, you know, like pre-COVID and all that. Certainly, they've gone back up.
Yeah.
And seemed to be maybe matching what was going on before the catechumens and the candidates.
And I think we're kind of at a point where we're pretty much back from all of that. There's still some lower numbers in some of our parishes, but I think for the most part, like, it's kind of back to
normal. I loved, you know, it wasn't Mass, but it was Ash Wednesday at noon, and church was full.
Yeah. You know. We haven't seen that in a while either. Mm. I mean, Christmas Mass is, the Christmas Mass I went to was very full this year.
Yep.
And even last year, Easter was very full. So I'm nervous and excited. I don't want to have to stand the whole time. But
I had to at Christmas Mass.
I've had to do that in the past. So, I mean, it's something I can do. I just don't enjoy it.
The other thing is following in my dad's footsteps. You know, it's like my dad was always the first one to offer his seat to somebody,
yes.
You know, and chivalry, you know, back in the day. And you don't see that as often, male, female, but somebody who's elderly or for whatever sure. reason, you know, or somebody with young kids or,
yeah.
you know, just somebody who you don't want to kind of identify them and say, well, you need to sit more than I do because you look like you need it,
right.
you know, but he would always get up and offer to see. So you sit there and if you just sit there like a bump on a pickle, you feel kind of guilty, you know.
I've never heard that phrase before, but that's a good one. Yeah. So, yeah, those are all those numbers are kind of coming back. And I think, you know, being part of this revival that's been going on for the last 3 years, I think that's part of it. I know there is still, you know, we still have one more part for this coming up.
And yeah, I want to hear about
that. There's the procession.
Walking all the way to Indianapolis? It's hard to say quickly.
I
got to
be up at camp.
Sort of on the way to Indianapolis.
No, I will be at camp. I know that there are many people that are doing it. And a part of that procession will be going through our diocese. I think Deacon Kevin is probably the best person to have on to talk about that.
Yeah, I think all the way up to Lake Tahoe.
It is. Yeah. I'm supposed to help possibly with the Tahoe part, which will be via boat. So,
oh wow,
to pass really? It to the next one, yeah.
Because the state line, which would be the diocese line, it goes right across the lake.
Yeah. So that's the joy of this is there's like the Eucharist will be traveling via boat.
I don't think I knew that. I knew there was going to be some river stuff.
There river stuff and Lake Tahoe is
wow.
That's the last I heard. Now you know things could change, but I'm pretty sure we're still doing the boat in Tahoe.
And it will be. I think mid to late May.
It's Memorial Day weekend.
Always a Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's and our last day is the Friday of Memorial Day weekend.
Okay. So Lake Tahoe will be up to about 40 degrees.
Yeah.
By then.
No, it'll be nice and warm. That's a great weekend to go.
Oh yeah, the air temperature will be fine.
Oh, you mean the water?
The water.
Oh yeah, the water's gonna be freezing.
Yeah, it's freezing in
I'm
July.
Not going in the water. Come on.
I've gone in Donner Lake, the summer
as a child. Yes.
And it's brutal.
Not as cold as the lake, as the pond at camp.
I know. We were talking to Bobby the other day about the pond at camp, and she seemed to think it was very popular, and I said, do I need to bring an ice pick?
No, you don't, but it is very popular. We'll be filling it up shortly. Usually we do that the mid to end of May, and the water.
So you divert it from a creek.
We divert it from a creek, and so
we're talking about Camp Pendola.
Camp Pendola, which is the other hat I wear. We divert it from, I think it's Bridger Creek up there, and I could be wrong. There's a couple of creeks that kind of all merge. We close it off, and we'll do that in a few weeks to create the pond.
Some of it, at this year time of year at least, it's snow melt.
Some of it is, most of it is snow melt. It's cold. If it's not snow melt, it sure is disguising itself
yeah,
as
yeah,
snow
right,
melt.
Right.
Now, the water is very cold. I've never gone up above my knees because it's just too cold.
Yeah, it's funny. You can be barefoot and dip your toes in, and no big deal. But boy, it's when you get it up over your shoulders.
Yeah.
There's something about that just
no, thank you. Yeah, hard pass.
Your body just tightens up.
So yeah, we'll do that soon, and then we've got work weekends coming up in May. So
yeah, talk about the work weekend.
So we've got two this year. The last two weekends of May, so Memorial Day weekend and the weekend before, we have lots of projects that we'll be working on. A lot of them kind of beautification of camp, cleaning up some stuff because there's always winter is rough. And also like pine needles.
Do you need people that can haul stuff? Do they need to bring
people,
their pickups? Or?
If they can bring their pickups, that's great. If people can bring, you know, shovels and chainsaws, that's even better. It's a lot of like cutting stuff
you
back.
You don't want me bringing a chainsaw.
I know.
No. Okay.
Yeah. But also just simpler projects too. I mean, my dad was already volunteering, and it's great if we can get some nights groups to come up and just they can come and when they can have fellowship at night and do, you know, whatever. However they would like to hang out or have a night's meeting, we can give them a cabin to themselves if they need that. But we're just looking for help to just get everything ready. It's a lot of moving pieces, and We want it to be great for when the campers start arriving and when the staff start arriving in the middle of June.
So sprucing it up.
Sprucing it up.
Even though there might not be a spruce on the ground.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of it is also some painting projects this year. We want to try to beautify some of our cabins. Some of it's some repairs. There's, you know, inevitably something breaks.
Yeah.
I mean, hello. Something.
Are some of the buildings there as old as camp? Like 60 some years old?
Most of them are older.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the cabins, I'm not exactly sure when they all got built. I think in the 70s.
The cabins were strictly for camp, though. Mm-hmm. They weren't used prior to for workers or anything.
No, they were strictly put in for the campers. Our Tekakwitha Lodge, named for Kateri, Tekakwitha.
I love that name.
And so do I. Chief Seattle Lodge, which is now our male staff dorm. And then the these three buildings, I'm 90% sure. I'm never 100%. And then the lower staff house, which is where our office is, those were originally there.
Okay.
And then I think there's two cabins that were there as well. But
was there a residence on the ranch?
Yeah. So that this was actually the mining camp, like the not lodging camp, logging.
The logging camp, yeah.
That was a hard word for me to say.
Just
right
say
there.
Lumber.
The lumber camp. That's the word. So like the Seattle building used to have it still has an upstairs, but it had like an exit, like that was part of the lumber office. And so, that was all done out of there. And there was like our lower staff building used to be, I think it was a house or at least for a while it was the kitchen. And when you go in there, you can still see where like the holes in the walls would be like for the exhaust to go out and where the bathroom was, which is now just a closet. We don't have water or anything going into that building anymore, but it used to.
So the chapel, when was it built?
The chapel was built in the late 70s, early 80s. I think the dedication was like in 80 or 81.
And no heat or air?
There are fans, but there was a stove,
wood burning stove to heat it. Yeah,
yeah, and we had some storm damage last year, and so the only way to we had to cut that off. So we're going to be removing that this year and trying to find some other ways to heat it for the off season, because we would like to in the next year or so open up Camp Pendola for retreat groups during the year.
All year round.
That's our goal. Yeah.
Wow.
Probably have to close it December, January.
That's pretty ambitious.
It is.
They do get some snow.
We do get some snow up there. So, I mean, but we get some snow in Trinity Pines, and we do
trees
up there all year too. So, I think it's totally doable. We just have to adjust fix some heaters, and we'll be able to do that, hopefully.
Is there a lot of demand for retreats and things
There's
like that?
There's a decent amount, yeah. And people would like things that are more, you know, more remote. Some people really like that we have there's no signal. You can't get your phone to work up there. So it does give people a chance to really be detached from their screens, which is something that is a selling point for our campers and a selling point, I think, for some of our staff. So, you know, we're still hiring. We're still looking for staff and campers. All that, everything can be found about camp and registration and hiring at pendola.org. But yeah, we're deep in it now.
So talk a little bit about counselors, what their duties are. And
so they are in charge of a group of campers, basically the whole time the campers are there. Mostly they're leading activities with them, helping them with prayer, helping them kind of get ready in the morning, reminding them to make their beds, things that your parents do. And they're in charge of all of those activities. And they work weeks at a time. They're paid a weekly stipend.
More than a stipend.
Well, I mean, it's their paycheck, right? Yeah.
A stipend makes it sound like
it's a substantial amount.
Yeah, they're getting paid.
They're getting paid. Yeah. They are paid, definitely.
And there's no place to spend it.
And there is no place to spend it, so you've got all that money when you go back to school. We've got counselors. And so that's basically what they're doing. They're taking care of campers. They're staying in a cabin with at least one other person, one other adult. So two counselors per cabin. And just trying to make sure the kids have the really good experience. We're getting pretty full on our girls week. I think it might be because it's called the Eras Tour. yes, I'm using pop culture. to spread the gospel. Thank you. And we're trying, and then we've got our Invaders of the Night week for our teens, and we've got some leadership opportunities, some leadership camps for our older teens. We've got an LIT program and a CIT program, so leaders in training and counselors in training for those guys in high school.
So what kind of training does a counselor go through before you turn them loose?
Before we turn them loose with campers? Well, they learn, you know, they get CPR and first aid and all that kind of fun stuff. Those safety things. They learn a lot of safety things. They learn a lot of outdoor living skills, how to cook on an open fire, how to use the supplies we have in the kitchen. They learn a lot of different arts and crafts. You learn how to tie-dye. Some people don't know how to do it. A lot of string arts, rosary making, friendship bracelets, that kind of stuff.
Archery. Somebody told me you're like a black belt in archery or something.
I'm not that great, but I can usually get a bullseye when I'm trying to shoot in front of the kids. I think it's like God's like, I'm not going to let
you.
Yeah. God's like, I'm going to give you this one. I'll let the kids think you can shoot. But honestly, until I took this job, I'd never even picked up a bow or an arrow.
Hard to learn?
It wasn't easy, but I think I just really wanted it to, like, I didn't want to look like a dork in front of the kids, for lack of a better phrase. And so I just picked it up and did it. So I love teaching the kids archery. It's one summer I had to do all of the archery, and that was a lot for me. But if I can just, like, step in and, like, help a kid get a bullseye.
Do the wild animals all scramble when they see the bow and arrow come out?
The wild animals scramble when they hear the children.
Yeah.
So we're usually safe there. But, yes, there's nothing. Yeah, we're just shooting at targets.
You ever see animals walk through camp?
Yep.
Like what kind?
Well, I've seen a black bear.
Really?
Multiple times. Seen deer, a lot of deer.
I was out for a walk at
Fox.
Foxes. Deer, for sure.
Deer, not as often as you'd think.
Yeah.
Smelled skunks. Luckily, never saw them.
But you can have that in town. You know.
Yeah. Now, at least. Yeah. And then, you know, we have a lot of lizards. And we have a very strict rule. We do not touch the lizards.
Oh, is that right?
Well, because do you know what a lizard does when it gets scared and you're picking it up? They generally will drop their tails because it'll regrow.
Yeah.
But then you just have a bunch of weird looking lizards running around camp. And so
you can't make something out of the tails, like, you know.
No, no, they're creepy.
You can't knit with them.
No, I mean, no.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they drop their tails. So that's one of the strict rules we have. Like, please don't pick up the lizards.
Are you fast enough to pick up a lizard? The ones I've seen, they just dart.
You would be amazed how often kids catch them or want to catch them. So we really do make, like, we don't touch the animals.
There are a few bears around up there. I've encountered bears a couple of times in the Sierra. I've never seen one like crossing a road or something, like you're really afraid that you'd see a bear because you don't want to hit it.
Yeah. I
saw one in a shopping center in South Tahoe.
So, I mean, the bears in Tahoe, like you see on the news, it's not like that. These bears want nothing to do with us. They you and go the opposite direction.
Yeah, exactly.
And the staff are trained on what to do. It's basically just make some noise and they go away. You know, and we make sure to have all of our trash covered and because
that's the big thing.
They're just scavengering. Yeah. They're scavengers, right? So that's it. That's all. We just keep it covered and then we remind the kids to be loud. Like, there's your excuse. Be loud. We asked you to. So we do good. We do good with that. But it's
sounds like all kinds of fun.
Yeah,
and you have priest in residence this summer.
We do. I'm so excited. They're two of my favorite people too. So Father Dean Marshall's going to be up there, and Father Ryan Marr. They've split up the summer. They've split up staff training as well. So they'll be up there for all of staff training and the whole summer with us. And then even for part of cleanup week. And they love camp as much as I do. They love the staff. They want to be supportive of the staff and of me and of the campers. So it's a lovely gift that we're going to have this summer them there.
Jennifer, always a pleasure to see you. Appreciate you, taking the time to be with us and
of course,
wearing multiple hats today.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Thanks so much. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon. I want to take a minute to talk about the annual Catholic Appeal, the 2024 annual Catholic Appeal. So important here in the Diocese of Sacramento. So many ministries supported by the annual Catholic Appeal, and the people in the Diocese of Sacramento have always been so generous. But a wonderful brochure, a pamphlet, really, that you may have received in the mail, and on the back cover a picture, maybe it's front, I guess that's the front cover, Deacon Kevin Staskow says, I really think that everyone has something to give. When Jesus was literally dying on the cross, he found the strength to turn to the thief being crucified next to him and minister to that person. So often we have all kinds of excuses not to reach out to those next to us. Indeed, today you will be with me in paradise. And you look through this brochure, and you will learn the many, many, many ministries that are supported by the annual Catholic Appeal. And 25% of your donation goes back to the parishes for social ministry at your parish. 50% supports charities, Catholic Charities of Sacramento, and the members in that are Catholic Charities of Yolo Solano, Northern Valley Catholic Social Service, which serves Butte, Glen, Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties in this 20-county diocese, and Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services right here in the greater Sacramento area. Also, associate members are Camp Recreation, serving Northern California, the Mother Teresa Maternity Home in Placerville, the Rancho Cordova Food Locker in greater Sacramento, the Upper Room Dining Hall in Placerville. Many of you have worked at those places, are very familiar with those places, or have availed yourself of the wonderful services they provide. 25% supports education, seminary and formation, and Catholic school tuition assistance. Partners the annual Catholic Appeal and Catholic Charities of Sacramento include Anderson Cottonwood Christian Assistance, Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home right here in Sacramento that does such wonderful work, the Catholic Ladies Relief Society up in Chico, Community Assistance Network in Greenville, Portola, and Quincy up in the hills, Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento, which just does wonderful work with the homeless, Sacramento Life Center, which has saved so many lives here in the Sacramento area, Salvation Army Food Shelf in Susanville, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul and their seven district councils, the North State, Placer, Yuba, Sutter, Butte, Sacramento East, South Sacramento, Elk Grove, Sacramento Metro Area, and Yolo Delta and Solano. Also, the Stanford Settlement Neighborhood Center in Sacramento and the Wellsprings Women's Center in Sacramento, plus Yuba City, Yuba Sutter, Right to Life, the two counties just north of Sacramento. More than 100 programs provide things like counseling, emergency fund, shelter and clothing, permanent and transitional housing, job training, pregnancy counseling, post and prenatal care, independent living skills, mentoring, parenting skills, after school care, refugee resettlement, citizenship and immigration services, and jail ministry. Our gifts help people who are mentally ill, homeless, disaster survivors, immigrants, elderly, developmentally disabled, incarcerated, working families, refugees, at-risk youth, the unborn, pregnant women, the hungry, and single parents. Such a wide, wide range of our Catholic mission here on this earth and in this Diocese of Sacramento. One of the programs through Northern Valley Catholic Social Services is the court-appointed special advocate program, which is operated out of all the superior courts in the state of California, and it partners with Northern Valley Catholic Social Service to help kids who need advocates in the courts. They talk about, in this pamphlet, a young woman named Isabel, who is devoted to ensuring a positive support system for foster kids now and for their future. As a court-appointed special advocate, a program administered with compassion and dedication by Northern Valley Catholic Social Service, Isabel gives kids the voice they need in court to have a positive path in life. She was once in foster care herself. The severe trauma a child goes through is all too familiar. Today, she's reunited with her parents, has a family of her own, and is focused on becoming a lawyer. Northern Valley Catholic Social Services gives her the opportunity to advocate in court for children with stories like hers. Again, the annual Catholic Appeal, give generously, give whatever you can, whether it's a small amount, a large amount. Also, more men can say yes to the call to the priesthood. Support from the annual Catholic Appeal helps seminarian Eric Patrick, who is pictured in this brochure, to become Father Eric Patrick this past June. We've had him on our program, a delightful priest. Father Patrick is earnestly hopeful that he can be a conduit for the experience of God's mercy and love. With coughs offset by the appeal, the 12 men now in seminarian formation can focus less on financial worries and more on preparing to serve in our parishes. The annual Catholic Appeal, a wonderful, wonderful way to support so many ministries in the Diocese of Sacramento. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
We stand and lift up our hands, for the joy of the Lord is our strength. We bow down and worship Him now. How great, how awesome is He, and together we sing. The Lord.